This past week, not this one, but the last one, Ashley and I took our first vacation since our honeymoon, our first overseas one. And we decided to go down to the Dominican Republic to visit Megan. And a lot of people asked me leading up to that trip, are you going for missions work or are you going for vacation? And I thought that to be a very strange question, but it was kind of like, well, maybe yes, a little bit of no, but kind of both. And as I was down there, I got to go down to Ascension and Cara Bayou, which are the villages that we sent a missions team to a couple years ago. And I got to see the marketplace that they built and did a couple building projects of my own. And as I was there, I was comparing it to the missions experience that I had in 2007, when our church sent a team of, I think, 15 of us down to El Salvador to build houses. And it had me thinking a lot about the concept of missions, the concept of going and doing the Lord's work. It constantly had me comparing my experience back in 07 in another third world area to the one that I had this past week. And I remember at one point in the week being struck with a memory that I had from my trip to El Salvador, where I was talking to one of the locals, and they said, "You're one of the first missionaries that's ever come to speak Spanish." And it struck me as a very awkward statement to be called a missionary. Because back in those days, my idea of what a missionary was had to do with abandoning the culture that you grew up in and moving halfway around the world. Now, my definition of what a missionary is has changed and evolved and is continuing to evolve since then. But it's become apparent that sometimes we form definitions, we form ideas of what something is, as Christians, as followers of Jesus, that sometimes even differ from the person sitting next to us. Sometimes we get an idea of what something is or looks like in our mind, and there are aspects of it that are absolutely, totally true. But we tend to form ideas that, once again, we get set and comfortable in. So what I want you to do is I want to take a few minutes this morning, and I want to collaboratively share a little bit about what we think about missionaries and missions work. I've got a couple questions that I'd like to ask, and I want to invite you just to kind of shout some answers back to me and see if we can kind of, once again, just get some ideas out in the air on some of the things that we think about missionaries and missions work. The first question that I'd like to ask is, if you were a missionary to a people group or a certain area, how would you spend your first week? If you were a missionary to a new area, what would be some of the first things that you would do within those first 7 days? If anyone has any thoughts, just shout them out.
Pray.
Pray, absolutely. That's a big one. Anyone else? What's some of the first things you would do within that week?
Introduce yourself.
Absolutely.
Get to know your surroundings.
Get to know your surroundings. A lot of new things to take in. Absolutely. Anyone else?
Learn to listen.
Learn to listen. That's a great one. We'll go one more.
Share a meal.
Share a meal. Something that, once again, doesn't matter where you go in the world, you can do that with anyone. Absolutely. Now, the second question I'd like to ask is, once you get settled, once you kind of acclimatize a little bit, how would you go about sharing the gospel? What would some of your strategies, approaches be? If you can boil it down to a couple words, how would you go about sharing the gospel?
Music?
Music? Once again, something that's universal, fantastic. How else would you do it?
Meeting the needs.
Meeting the needs, absolutely. Embodying the gospel. What else?
Meetings are getting into where food's involved when they come to the meal or something.
Absolutely, spending time within groups where you have that opportunity. What about anyone else? Absolutely, using visuals, because once again, you may not be comfortable enough with the language yet to really be able to articulate Jesus the way you think you want to. Absolutely. Anyone else? Maybe one more?
Share your own story.
Your own story. There's nothing you know better than the relationship that you have with God. There's nothing more powerful than sharing the story of your own redeemed heart through the Lord. Absolutely. It's interesting. When we take some of the things that we've said here, sharing a meal, using visuals, spending time with people, meeting needs, if we were to put all of these attributes, these actions into a list, into kind of like an how-to manual of how to reach out in a new environment as a missionary, if we created that list and then thought to ourselves, who does that best? Well, for me, there's only one name that really comes to mind, and if you've looked at the sermon title, you've probably guessed who it is already. Jesus. Oftentimes, we think of Jesus as God, and we think of mission work or missionaries as being humans. But the reality is, God, in the way in which he reached out to each and every one of us as humans, embodied the absolute principle of what missions work and what it is to be a missionary. Jesus was the perfect missionary. And we know through reading Scripture that we are called as followers of Jesus to model our lives after him. We know that, once again, Jesus is the example in which we are to follow in how to live, love, and share in our own lives. But modeling Jesus means more than just our actions and our attitudes. What it means is to model an approach of how to live our lives in relationships with the people around us. How to live our lives in relation to those we have been placed with. Living a life after Jesus means more, and it means to reach out, to evangelize, to go beyond our own comfort zones. Whether it's locally or globally, each and every one of us actually have the same thing that's asked of us. We actually have the same required responsibilities to follow. And in that sense, whether we travel halfway around the world to share about Jesus, or whether we do it in our own neighborhood, our to-do list is still the same. And actually, the strategies that we use are almost identical. All the things that you guys shared this morning in terms of how you would spend your first week in a new area doing missions work, or how you would seek to share the gospel, each and every example that you guys gave is just as applicable in your own context right here at home as it is around the world. We need to live lives with a missional focus each and every day. And when we look at the life of Jesus, there are actually a number of different unique and different approaches he took to evangelism, to reaching out. There are a number of different unique and different approaches that God made in terms of how to speak into a body of people. That when we look at those, we actually gain a better and more complete understanding of how to do it ourselves. And the first way in which the Lord did this was through the incarnation, through God taking on human form. This is the most central and important aspect of how to share the gospel within our lives. There's a verse in John that says, "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." A long, long, long time ago, we as humans fell short of the lives that we were meant to live. We didn't live up to the way in which we were capable of living and the way in which we were designed to live. We began to mistreat each other. We began to put ourselves and our own needs far above those around us and far above what God has asked of us. As humanity existed, it became very apparent that in falling short of that relationship with God, of that existence we were supposed to have, that we would never be able to repair those relationships with each other or with God the way that they were intended. So God made a plan. God set in motion events that would take place which would bring us back to that perfect and whole relationship with the Creator, the one that we were always meant to have. Now this plan, although it could have happened within the blink of an eye and could have happened in a way in which that would have been instantaneous, God set out a plan that would take time to happen and would happen in such a way that we would all be able to recognize the truth for what it was. And this plan involved God coming down in human form. Now this always kind of, for a long time, really struck me as being hard to understand. How can you really be fully God and fully human? But God came and embodied a human being and a human body and lived the life exactly the way that we were meant to. God lived a life in which he experienced humanity as we do. Now, this action, this incarnation, it didn't just happen one day and the Messiah started saying, "I'm the Messiah, everyone look and recognize that this is true." But God laid out a plan. He left hints, breadcrumbs along a trail through generations, so that when the Messiah did arrive, there would be evidence, there would be proof that this was the Messiah. God gave prophecies. He gave people moments of clarity in which they understood truth and gave little hints as to who the Messiah would be. These prophecies came over generations so that when the Messiah did come, everyone would know who he was. And these prophecies were in such a range of events and things that took place that it was completely out of the control of any one person to accomplish. Because they had to do with their genealogy, their parenthood, the way they were born, the way their childhood existed, the way and things that they did in adulthood, or the things that were done to Jesus in adulthood. There's no way one person could have ever decided one day, you know what, I'm going to fulfill all these things and then say I'm the Messiah. But it was through the fulfillment, through events happening that were foretold, that we knew who the Messiah would be. And this includes even, once again, I mentioned his birth. His birth, we know that there were things that happened, the way in which Jesus was born, that showed us who he was. And even showed people who weren't Jewish that this truly was the Son of God. I'm always amazed by the story of the Magi because they weren't Jewish. They didn't have a faith history of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. But even they came to acknowledge who Jesus was and bowed and called him king. And as Jesus grew up, he embodied humanity. He embodied life to its full extent. Talk about getting into how the culture works and experiencing the culture as a local would, which once again, that's the essence of missionary work. Jesus grew up going to weddings, funerals. He grew up going to religious feasts, Passovers, Sabbath, all the traditions that came with it. Jesus experienced what it was like to live as a Jewish man in that age and time. He was immersed, he was present, he was participating in every aspect of life as it would have been for any man of that age and of that time. And that's kind of, once again, the things that we said at the beginning. We would settle in, we would understand the way the culture works, we would participate in the culture, exactly as God did for each and every one of us. Now, in his teaching and leading of people, Jesus had a really different and unique approach to things. An approach that if we actually described it on paper, some of the things that he did and said are actually counterintuitive to what we think of success. They're actually so backwards from leadership models that when we look at them in principle, they don't seem like things that would actually do work and things that would change. And as we dive into looking at Jesus and the way in which he led and experienced the people around him, we're going to divide them up into two people groups, because I think that would be the easiest way. We're going to look at the disciples and the masses, everyone else. In terms of Jesus' relationship with his disciples, it began very, very differently for each one. But it began with a call. Jesus would approach a few of them and say, "Put down what you're doing at this exact moment in time and come and follow me." Now, I don't know about you, but if a random person came up and said, "Just drop what you're doing and follow me," my immediate thought would be, "No, I'm doing something. Can't you see that?" But there was obviously something appealing about Jesus, something that drew them in from the get-go, that once again, they were willing to leave what they were doing and follow him. Some of the disciples of Jesus were actually disciples of John to begin with. And John said, that is the guy to follow, so you just go. Just start following him right now. Now, if I was in a class and a teacher said, "Oh, did you see that teacher walk by? Get out of my class and go to his class instead," I'd start to wonder a little bit, like, what is going on? Who is this person? Are they really that much better than the person that I'm learning from right now? But the way in which Jesus experienced his disciples in those first moments, he drew out of them a response that they wouldn't have made on their own. And as he led them with an expectation of the way in which they would follow. He led them expecting more from them than they were capable of doing, or more than they would have been capable of on their own. And he required a great sacrifice from them. Jesus said, "Take up your cross and follow me." That would be like, once again, a comparison for today. Take up your noose and follow me. It doesn't sound very inviting, doesn't sound like it would have a great success rate. But Jesus required sacrifice, and he expected of his followers that they would follow him. Jesus led very purposefully the disciples. He knew what he was doing with them at each and every individual point in time. He took them places they never would have gone on their own. He took them into the homes of hookers and tax collectors, which were like the loan sharks of the day. He took them to the seediest parts of the community, places that no self-respecting Jew would ever go over there and see those people. He led them with courage and conviction, with a purpose in mind. Jesus constantly did ministry within people groups that, once again, Jewish people did not associate with. With the Samaritans, or when he healed the servant of the Roman centurion. Jesus didn't put boundaries on who was acceptable in his life or who he should talk to and didn't talk to. And he pushed his disciples to cross all of those same boundaries, to break the expectation of what society expected, and to go, most importantly, where the need really deeply is. And even within that, Jesus pushed people out of the roles that they had in terms of their own culture. I mean, the story of Mary and Martha is just a beautiful picture of that, where Jesus is letting a woman sit with him at his feet, learning with his disciples, which once again would have been very strange, culturally speaking, because that was not a place for a woman to be. And same with Jesus speaking to the woman at the well, a conversation that politically in the day, shouldn't have really happened. But it did. Jesus constantly, within his disciples and within the people he ministered to, made calculated decisions to give the best result to. Jesus' ministry constantly transcended traditional leadership values or cultural expectations. And it was always intentional and full of purpose. Once again, our actions need to be the same. We need to, in our own relationships, seek to inspire each other, seek to push each other, uncomfortably so, on both parts, to being more than we're capable of being and to hold to a higher standard of what we can accomplish. And we need to be pushed ourselves, because if we're never pushed, we'll never accomplish greater things than what we're capable of doing. Some of my greatest leadership victories have been from being thrown into a situation or given a task that I had never done before or had not planned to do. And once again, we need to throw ourselves full headlong into opportunity, because it's through opportunity that we can have the greatest success in sharing the gospel, if only we allow ourselves to be pushed. Now, Jesus and the masses, Jesus and the greater world around him, he had a really weird approach to people. As a leader, Jesus avoided celebrity as much as possible. We read about in Scripture how he's constantly disappearing from crowds or getting in a boat and leaving because it was just too busy. But everywhere that Jesus went, word would get ahead of him that he was coming, and people would meet him there. We read stories in the New Testament of Jesus getting ready to go to a village, and when he gets there, the entire city has turned out for his arrival. But he constantly pushes people away from following him. He's constantly pushing off the title and the mantle of great, amazing leader. If Jesus' intention was to really gain a following, gain as many people as possible within the Jewish community, wouldn't he have stayed within the synagogues and rose as high in the ranks as he could? He was definitely smart enough to run the show. But he turned away from that for the need of the individual. Even amongst his ministry, we don't even read at any point of Jesus doing baptisms. We actually read that John the Baptist actually went around with Jesus for a little bit and did the baptisms. Even within the stories that we read of people coming up to Jesus and saying, just tell me what I need to do to follow you. And he says, no. Go home and pray. Constantly, as he heals people of ailments that were life-threatening, what is his response to them? Go home and spend time by yourself in prayer and celebration with the Lord over what has happened and your family. Jesus didn't really care about title. He didn't really care about having the biggest followers. He only selected 12 people to live with him on a daily basis, which was a relatively small number compared to how the other teachers of that day. But Jesus' priority, first and foremost, was people, was the individual. It was never about gaining as many people as possible, or never about the status or a test that someone could give to his name. But it was about love for the marginalized, care for those in need. And he did that in such a way that he didn't really care what people thought about him in the meantime. He had this sense of reckless love that just constantly pushed each and every person around him to think so much farther than they were capable of or themselves. And Jesus, within his ministry, constantly invited people to discover. He had a very come-and-see attitude. They never went around and said, all right, guys, at 3 p.m., Jesus is going to be over on top of that hill. Bring your families, because he's going to be breaking fish this afternoon, and you want to see it. Jesus constantly, always just invited those around him, those who were there at any given moment in time, to just sit and listen to what he had to say. And as he spoke, he often spoke with questions, with the idea of trying to prompt people to getting to a greater understanding. It wasn't about shoving truth down their throat or blowing their mind away with miracles, so you couldn't argue from any perspective of who this was. But he cared about the heart and wanted to change the heart of the individual more than anything else. He used stories to connect to broader art audiences, just like you guys said earlier on, through visuals, through aids. He spoke stories using cultural examples to connect truth to personal circumstance, and did so in a way that constantly had people baffled at the depth of his wisdom. Jesus never wanted traditional success or to be seen as an icon. He sought to connect with people who needed to be connected with, primarily outside of the temple, where people lived. What was the best place to go when you got to a city in that day? The well. Why? Because everyone came to the well at some point during the day. It was like a city center where, once again, you'd be able to see anything and everything, get the way in which the city works. And as we seek to understand Jesus more, we need to expect more from ourselves to model the way in which he interacted with other people. There's a verse in 1 John that says, "But if anyone obeys his word, love for God is truly made complete in them. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did." The methods of Jesus were revolutionary. They were countercultural. They were intentional, and they were self-sacrificial. Jesus was a missionary in the most complete essence of the world through the way in which he came to earth and the way in which he lived with the people in that time in his neighborhood, constantly going out beyond what he was and where he was to make a difference for the individual beyond what people expected or what they thought he should do. The strategies that missionaries use are as applicable local as they are global. The things that Jesus did 2,000 years ago and the way in which he did his ministry are just as relevant today and just as real today as they were back in then. So the question is, what out of all of these methods of Jesus, these strategies of Jesus, what out of all the ways in which Jesus spoke and loved and cared, do you personally need to work on the most? That might be different each day. One day it may be one thing, another day something entirely different. You may do great at one aspect of following Jesus one day, and the next day fail completely and utterly at it. And if we try to just tackle it all at once, then it's going to be really, really challenging for us. So we're going to boil it down to three principles that, once again, can summarize, can categorize, and help us shape ourselves to be more like Jesus and, by extension, more missional in the way that we live, to be more like a missionary wherever you are. And the first is incarnational living. The first is the concept of depending on the Spirit of God within your daily life, of constantly inviting the Lord in to your own soul to help show you what it is that you need to learn, to help you see more clearly what it is that you need to see. We are, our bodies, temples of the Holy Spirit. We are the place where God is indwelling within the world. But unfortunately, the Lord is not the only thing that can get into our minds and hearts. Good is not the only force trying to work within us in the world. Every religion in the world, whatever it believes, has this tension within it. And we need to constantly be filling ourselves of God, filling ourselves of truth and goodness and something positive to keep us in the best shape to do God's work. We need to learn to depend on the Spirit in our lives each and every way. And the way that starts is by asking God, help me today. Give me strength today. Teach me today. Second thing that we have to focus on is our community. And when I say community, you can take whatever definition of that you want, because there will be aspects of truth within that. But our community can include our brothers and sisters in Christ. It can include our geographic neighborhood, or where you live, or where you work. It can include your friends, your family. But in each and every one of those opportunities, we need to remind ourselves that we are currently and constantly being sent by Jesus to bless others, and most importantly, invite others to follow him. This is the heart of the Great Commission that Jesus gave us. And this most often is the one that sometimes we do the least of. We get really good at working at ourselves to make ourselves an attitude and character more like Jesus. But we need to so heartily focus ourselves, and this is the hardest part, to go out and invite other people to follow him. And this is not a advisory of how to do a great job. This is not something that, once again, the great people have success in and the most devout do the best. This is a simple core requirement of what the Lord has asked us to do. We are constantly and daily commissioned by God. We need to be willing and to push ourselves to allow ourselves to be sent and to invite. And finally, the third is to renew our hearts. To continue to work at learning to be like Jesus in our attitudes, the way we treat each other and the way we think. Within our behaviors, the things that we do and say and the way in which we treat other people. And within our character, the way we think and how our thoughts affect the way we behave. We need to constantly seek to grow and constantly seek to change to be more like the example that Jesus laid out. Now, change is hard. Change is brutal. There are some people that just can't change, it seems, no matter how hard they try. And I like to think of change as being a healing wound. And when I say wound, I don't mean a paper cut. I mean like a life-threatening wound, injury. Change is like a healing, life-threatening injury because it is so painful to begin with. Those first few steps are the hardest, the most tragic for us to wrap our minds around and do. But as change continues, and as we allow ourselves to be open to it, it does get a little easier every day. As a kid, I fell off a chairlift skiing, and somehow something happened with my legs that they got twisted up and I couldn't walk coming out of the hospital. I remember we decided to go to the movies a couple days later, and we got to the movie theater, and my mom carried me in, and they actually assigned one of the movie theater staff to carry me around. So I had this like big burly guy carry me into the movie theater, sit me in the seat, and then he went and got snacks for us and came back. And it was fantastic for those first few days. I'm like, I don't need to change at all. This is great. Everyone brings me everything I need, and I really don't have to do anything. I ended up spending that first week crawling around the house, and eventually I got to standing again after about 2 weeks. And I remember going back to school after about 3 weeks. And I remember getting to school, and I laid down on the concrete, and I started to try to crawl to my classroom. And I scraped up my legs really badly, and I was like, okay, this really isn't going to work, so I obviously can't get around like I have been getting around. So I stood up, and those first few steps were agonizing. I was like in tears by the time I walked across the playground to my classroom. That night, my legs were swollen, bruised. Next day was maybe a little bit easier and a little bit easier, and about a week and a half later, I could finally walk comfortably again. If I had just thought that first day at school that this is the way things are going to be, I would have given up. If I had let that first day and how hard that change was to define the way in which I would handle change from that point forward, I never would have learned to walk again. But once again, the more we work at it, the easier it gets. The more we invite God to be a part of that process, the more space we give Him to change us more drastically. And the reality is, change should hurt. And the reason why is because if we are seeking to become from who we are to Jesus, that is a big gap for each and every one of us. And that change is going to take a complete deconstruction of who we are on a daily basis to learn to become better versions of ourselves, which I don't think anyone doesn't want to be a better version of themselves, to be more loving and compassionate. Change should hurt because it's hard. But the truth is, if it's not hurting you to change, you may not be growing at all. I struggled with how to phrase that statement this week because it is a very loaded one for me to say, personally. But the reality is, if we are called to be like Jesus and it is not hard for us to be like Jesus, then we're probably not being as much like Jesus as we think we are. We need to seek God to help us get where we need to go, where we want to go. Ask God this week to show you more of the ways in which you need to change. Those ways in which you need to take hold of being a missionary within your life. The ways in which you need to take hold of sharing who Jesus is with people who don't know Him. And if you do more of what's hard, if you allow yourselves to be pushed further in those actions, you will become more like Christ. But we need God to be a part of that process. Because we can't do it on our own. I don't think any of us want to do it on our own. But I know each and every one of us wants it. As we were putting together the order of service today, I wanted to include a closing hymn, and really there was only one that came to mind. So I'd like to invite our worship leaders back up, and as we move into this hymn, let this be your prayer for this morning. Let this be your prayer, and ask God to do this in your